WeBuyCars.co.za, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
702.
Weekend Breakfast
with Googs Mshungu. Let's walk the talk.
It's 16 minutes after 6 o'clock. Welcome back to the Saturday edition of Weekend Breakfast. My name is Googs Mshungu. In a moment, we'll get into our healthy living, where we're looking at today, the 28th of May, is Menstrual Hygiene Day. And just as a reminder, we will be speaking to our resident GP and the CEO of Proactive Health Solutions, Dr. Fundile Nyathi. Dr. Nyathi will join us to speak about monkeypox. We've heard a lot about monkeypox in the news. There have been some concerns about whether we should be worried as South Africa, as cases are being detected in different parts of the world. We'll speak to Dr. Nyathi about that. But right now, though, we're joined on the line by Dr. Ntsiki Manzini-Mathebula, Sexual Reproductive Health Rights Program Specialist at the UNFPA South Africa. Doctor, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us on Weekend Breakfast.
Good morning, Gugu, and good morning to the listeners.
Thank you so much for your time. So when we speak about menstrual hygiene, what exactly are we talking about?
So menstrual hygiene really looks at how a menstruator, so that could be a woman, a girl, or somebody that is menstruating, and how they really look after themselves when they are menstruating. But it also includes other aspects. Could be education. It also looks at the product. So whether menstruators or girls, women have access to products, whether they're knowledgeable about it. And in addition to that, we also look at the water, sanitation and hygiene facilities and disposal facilities. So that is really what menstrual hygiene would be looking at. So it's really a comprehensive aspect of and then we also look at stigma and taboos around menstruation.
Yeah. And I mean, for South Africa, we often hear that there are girls, particularly in poorer communities, who often lose X number of days per year because of this lack of products to when they are on their period. They don't have these products. Is that still the case in South Africa, that we do have young women and girls who don't have access to products, so they can't go to school, and so the impact is on their education?
So what we found is that whilst we recognize that we have girls that do not have access to products, and these would be largely girls, say, for example, in quintiles 1, 2, 3 schools, as well as farm schools and rural schools. What we've also found, though, however, is that one of the main reasons why girls are also not going to school is not because they don't have access to products. It is also because of pain that they experience during menstruation. And at times, it's also the wash facilities at the schools. So some girls don't go to school not because they don't have the product, but because of the state of the wash facilities at school. So I think what we normally look at is what I think is then important is to recognize that access to product is not just the only limiting factor, but also in addition to that, there's other factors that contribute to girls not going to school.
And Doctor, the other issue relates to the quality of products. I think it was last year or the year before, women in Kenya started a hashtag on Twitter raising concerns about a particular, it was a popular brand of menstruation products, of hygiene products, saying that they were struggling with rashes, they were struggling with various issues relating to those products. How big an issue is the quality of products, where they, so there's, on one side, there's the issue of a lack of access to products, but even where there is access, there seems to also be the issue of quality.
Yes. So the issue of quality of products in South Africa, we have two standards that look at South African Bureau of Standards, which is the SANS 1043 2010 for disposable products. So generally, this is where most products need to be tested against. What we have found is that the ones that are available at most retail shops through the ISO standard, which is an international standard for disposable products. But we've also introduced the standard on reusables, which is SANS 1812-2020. And what I have to, though, mention is that it's not compulsory to get the product tested. So you will find that some of the products that are occurred may not necessarily been tested. So I believe that this is still a big issue and that we really need to advocate on this matter, because we have heard and seen, even within our local context, of standards that are not of quality.
And so if there isn't an obligation, if manufacturers don't have to comply, then how would I as a consumer make sure that the product is the correct standard? Is there any other information I can use?
So at this point, there isn't really much you can do as a consumer. But what the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities has done is that they have been engaging the national regulator for standards. And this is really to look at whether there could be a possibility of making the SABS standards compulsory, because this is really where we need to go as a country. I believe that as a consumer, I think at this point in time, it would really be conscientizing consumers about knowing that they are some products are not compliant. But again, recognizing that because it's not compulsory, I think we as a populace really need to advocate on this issue and recognize that we've got to make sure that manufacturers are compliant with these standards, even though it's not voluntary. It's really a catch-22 situation, but the policy around that and advocacy around that is going to help us raise more awareness on it.
You mentioned the Department of Women and Persons with Disabilities and their involvement. With regards to the framework that they've created, is that now in place or is it still in discussion?
The framework was actually approved by Cabinet in September of 2019. Mm-hmm. So it is in place, and they are receiving support from the National Treasury, and there's a national rollout of the Sanitary Dignity Program in all the 9 provinces.
The other part of, the conversation around menstrual hygiene is education. And I wonder how much of that education relates to stigma, because as we know, there is quite a lot of stigma around, girls and women and their bodies, menstruation. So when we speak about the need for education in this context, what do we mean?
So I think in our case, we've got to recognize that even though we do have our life orientation or comprehensive sexuality education in schools, but we really have to look at the content and then be able to talk to young people, both girls and boys, around menstruation. And what we mean there is that a young girl needs to know about menstruation, before she reaches the age of menarche. And this is before she menstruates. But generally what we find is that young girls are finding out about menstruation later. So they don't have the information about menstruation. And I think that is the important aspect. But also bringing in the boy child and the men into the conversations around menstruation, so that they're also able to support girls within their schools or within their families who are going through, who are on their menstrual cycle.
Do we have any examples of countries where the women and girls have provisions for, menstrual health, menstrual hygiene? Is the levels are good? There isn't this great inequality between, people can afford and people who don't. There is just this, the coverage for everyone or the access to products is fairly good. Not perfect, but good. Are there any examples that we can look at in the world where we go, this is close to the ideal as we currently have?
We have a lot of these in the United Kingdom, like Scotland as an example. You've got England. So really most of the best practices are coming from the developed countries. But I think as South Africa, we are also doing very well considering where we were maybe, say, 2 years ago. The fact that we have this funded program and the National Treasury is supporting the program on an annual basis and has committed about over 200 million per year year since 2020. I think for me, this is one of the best examples actually within Africa. What we found is that other countries within the African continent, be it like sub-Saharan Africa in particular, is that we've developed the good policies, but in terms of coverage, we haven't really been able to reach as many girls as possible. So I would say that largely it's the European countries that have good examples. And then in the Asia and Pacific, we also have those. Australia is also another good example. So, but I always say it's important that we compare ourselves with the countries within sub-Saharan Africa, because we are all, our economies are also at a different, you know, levels.
And if we look at sub-Saharan Africa, how does South Africa do in that context?
Well, I must say that South Africa is actually one of the leading countries within sub-Saharan Africa. I think we are a best practice country when it comes to menstrual health, both in terms of policy, but also in terms of funding the program.
Mm. What was the theme, or what is the theme for World Menstrual Hygiene Day this year?
So the theme for this year is really that making menstruation a normal fact of life by 2020. And this really is to look at four areas that we need to tackle. The first is the menstrual health product. And really around this area, you're looking at increasing access, but also ensuring that products are of quality standards. This is to make sure that we are able to provide acceptable national norms and standards in respect of various aspects relating to sanitary dignity and sanitary products. The second theme really is around stigma and myth. And this is, again, making sure that we raise our awareness and for menstruators who need to know about the menstrual health and hygienic practices, and also around stigma and myths, it's the involvement of boys and men, and how we bring them into the discussions. Then when we look at menstrual health education, really ensuring that menstruators need to reach them at a much earlier stage so that they know how to handle themselves when they are menstruating. But also menstrual health education is not just about when you're menstruating, but recognizing there's many areas within education, how to manage pain management, wash facilities, what is sanitation and period-friendly facilities. That also is quite important in terms of knowing about that. But also in addition to that, access to sanitation and period-friendly facilities. When we speak of period-friendly facilities, do facilities have water? Do the facilities have soap? Do they have a disposal bin, you know, to dispose of the product, or where can the product be disposed of? Yeah, so those are really what we refer to as period-friendly facilities. So, so that is really the theme for this year. Mm-hmm. And as a country, what we are doing is really promoting dialogues to strengthen these commitments. By the way, I must say that as a country, we've made commitments at the International Conference for Population Development plus 25 years in Nairobi in 2019, that we would ensure that we will provide sanitary towels, but also make sure that we reach girls in quintiles 1-3 schools, as well as in public universities and TVET colleges.
Hmm. Doctor, we've got a WhatsApp message here, and it says, "Morning, Gogo and the doctor. Why are girls having their first period at a younger age than we did at around 12 or 13? And that's from Dima. And I'm not sure if you can answer that question, but... that's the question we got.
So generally what we're finding is that girls are reaching puberty at a much earlier age, and this it seems would be because of the kind of foods that they are eating. And so I think that is what our understanding is about why girls are reaching puberty at a much earlier age. And but I think also that is a question that's really more for the medicals, and because I'm more on focusing on the social aspects of menstrual health.
Mm.
It's a question that one would need to really look into. But I think that the general or anecdotal evidence is that young people it's what they're eating, and therefore reaching puberty much earlier.
Doctor, thank you so much for your time this morning. We appreciate you joining us on the show.